This is the continuation of an oral history interview with Warren Cox, and this is for the Millers Point Oral History Project, tape number MPFH19, side A. Warren, there were quite a lot of changes in the rocks, especially in the 70s with the green bands, and Jack Mundy and the BLF and all that. Do you remember any of that, and did that affect Millers Point?
Didn't affect that much, I don't think, at the time. There was a few, actually, down in George Street North, I think, and actually up in, they wanted to do the same in Merriman Street. They wanted to get rid of all the residents and put doctors and solicitors and all that in there. And I think a few end up down in George Street North. I think they took part of that over and did that near the mercantile there. But they didn't do it in Merriman Street, which they wanted to do. I remember my brother was living around in Merriman Street at the time when he was married. When I got married in 72, and I moved out. We moved away. Kathy and myself moved away. We moved out to Coogee and to Ramwick, Coogee. And I remember seeing it on the TV and that. Used to go down and visit Mum and all that and talk about things like that. But the actual point itself, I don't think it affected that much. It was mainly down the Rocks area, I think, where they...
Did the residents of Millers Point think that they were next on
I think
on
they
line?
Did, yeah. A lot of them did, I think.
They felt threatened, did they?
Yeah. Because I remember my brother saying, he said, they want to get rid of us early in Merriman Street and do the same as they did down in George Street North and put doctors and things like that in there and solicitors and all that type of thing. Because that was overlooking Darling Harbour, the new wharf down there, 3 and 4 Darling Harbour.
Were you ever a member or part of any resident action group or any kind of protest?
No, I wasn't, no.
Right. Now, what were some of the significant events in your life, like major events that happened to you or your family?
Everyone left school and went to work, and the thing that worried me a lot was the time, the draft for the army and had to go to Vietnam and all that, and I was lucky I missed out. Friend of my brother's, he says, you haven't heard yet. He says, you might be late. He said, I think you'll miss out. He said, you should have heard by now. And I was lucky I did miss out. But a friend of mine, Geoffrey Thompson, who's from down the point in High Street, he got drafted and he only went to Pakapanyola. He went down to Pakapanyola. He was an electrician by trade and they used him as an electrician. He was doing auto electrical work on tanks and jeeps and things like that. But he was lucky too, I suppose. He didn't have to go to Vietnam. But that grocery shop I told you used to be up in the corner, turned into a hairdresser shop, which was Pam, girlfriend of my wife's. And her husband went to Vietnam, actually John Williams. He went to Vietnam. And they were there with the hairdressers, and then they moved over to Manly Vale, I think. But Pam used to live next door to the wife, with her mum used to live right next door, actually, I think sometime. And Kathy said, that's right, they lived in their place, boarded downstairs, down the bottom of their place. That's where they're so close, Pam, yeah.
Now, I believe your brother had a rather tragic event that happened to him. Tell me about that.
Which one is that? Graham. Graham's got hit by lightning. That was in 91, I remember that. His two sons were down the beach swimming, and they said a storm was coming and that, and he was at home with his wife, and he said, we'll go down and pick him up. And he drove down park and he said, I'll go out for a quick swim and tell him we're going home, pick him up. And they swam in as they were coming, he was walking up the beach, the lightning struck and hit him straight in the chest. Killed him. And he heard it and his wife rang my place, I was at home at the time. And I went straight down there and my car stalled going down, I was panicking and I was because I'd hit a puddle. And I was panicking and going off and got it going. I got down the beach and the lifeguard grabbed me. He said, I don't like your chances and that. And I grabbed her and I was hugging her and looking at my brother. I could see him there. And next minute, the ambulance and it says, we're going to take him up to Prince Henry Hospital. So I said to the wife, my brother's wife said, you go home. I said, I'll go up. And I went up there with it and followed him up. And the doctor come out and says, we can't revive him. He says, can you go and identify him? And I just broke up. I identified him and then I rang my wife. She was got home. She was been out and she'd been home with Jack. I said, can you go to Margs and keeper there told him not to come up to Prince Henry, Graham's dead. She went, what? So she went down there, and I drove down there from there, and I just had ordinary gear. I was working at home, and I went home and got changed, and we said, better go down and tell Mum. And we drove down the point and Glenda and Mum. It was a terrible day.
How did your mother take it?
Well, Mum wasn't real good at the time. She'd had a brain hemorrhage and that, but because she used to get us mixed up sometimes. And as soon as I walked in, she said, something's wrong, innit? I said, yeah. I said, she couldn't recognise, and she said, yeah, something's wrong. And I said, yeah, Graham's died. And she couldn't cry because she had no tear ducts. Like, there was no water in the tear ducts. She used to have drops and all that. And she just couldn't cry. And then about a month later, Mum died.
Yeah, there's a lot of tragedies in your family there. Mm. It's a freak accident, isn't it? It's something strange.
Oh, yeah. Then I went down the beach a week later to thank the lifeguards and the couple of lifesavers who tried to revive him and all that. And they were good, you know. Like, but that was really sad, eh?
Sure. Now, your son's working in the wharves as well, is he?
Yeah, Jack's down there. He's at a Port Botany. And he left school. He started there. He was lucky because they had a trainee ship going at the time. It was a new thing they were trying out. And it was quite good because they were teaching them. There was 15 of them all up. 10 stayed at Botany and 5 went to White Bay. And they taught them everything. They taught them computers, give them a first aid course. They were doing the first aid course with Oxyviva and resuscitations. And they really trained them up for 2 years really good on everything. And he's still out there now because not long after that, he got a job in the pay office. And he was in the pay office for 5 years doing all the pays and compos and things like that. And it was going good. And then all of a sudden, they changed that. They want to do that in head office. So they put them out. Now he's out working. There's only 2 men in the pay office now, and they're going too. They reckon another month or so they'll be gone. Their job will be gone. It'll be done over head office, and everyone says, Jesus Christ, how are you going to get your pay fixed up? Because a lot of the casuals, see, they get pay penalty rates and different things, and if they get upgrades for driving cranes and things like that, which the pay office does, well, now it's going to be done in head office. There'll be mess-ups all over the place. But yeah, there's been some changes like that, but Jack's still there, yeah, he's still going out there, yeah, driving a fork and all that, yeah.
What do you feel about the changes that have been forecast for the Patrick Wharves? When they leave next year, they're going to turn them into half residential, half office space, and the wharves are not going
to... Well, I can remember years ago, Neville Wran wanted to close them all down. He only wanted passenger ships in Sydney Harbour. He wanted everyone to go to Port Botany, but I don't think he expected it to be as big as it is. With containerisation, so even Port Botany's not big enough now. They're starting to run out of room. They're talking about expanding Port Botany because there's not enough room for Sydney, you know. And the closing down, I don't know what's going to happen here for the general cargo because there's no room out of Port Botany for general cargo. You need a shed to put stuff under cover, like some of the timber and paper and stuff like that. But they used to bring in rolls of paper in it. If it's not in containers, they've got to put it in a shed and keep it under cover. So I don't know what's going to happen there. It would be crazy. They were talking about sending it to Newcastle. Then it's going to cost more because they've got to truck it down or put it on rail. Bring it from Newcastle. Because a bloke told me years ago, he said 90% of the stuff that comes into the ships comes to Sydney. The stuff that comes in the ships in Sydney stays in Sydney. It's the same in Melbourne. That's why... But we get containers out there which go on the rail to go to Brisbane and Melbourne and all that too. So there's some ships, you know, bringing stuff that's going to other places, but like you said, if it's going to put stuff in Newcastle, you're going to put more traffic on the freeway, it's going to make it worse.
So when these wharves are gone, the Patrick's wharves, in about a year, and there won't be any more activity, how do you feel about that?
I think it's bad personally, because not just my point of view, but for me personally, being a wharfie and that, but other wharfies and that, but I mean, it's for me, it's getting rid of work for people, because not everyone's can work computers or do office work, so you've got to have labourers' jobs like as waterfront and things like that. And if you're going to get rid of them, where are you going to have jobs for people in the future? To me, that's how I look at it.
What about from the Millers Point perspective? I mean, how the suburbs going to change without the waterfront activity?
Well, like I said, I haven't been taking much notice of things down there now, but it does affect them a little bit. I suppose it might even improve for some of the hotels and things down there, because they might have more residents staying in them, might go up their thing, go up the point for the pubs and things like that. But as far as other shops, I don't know how the shops are going to go, but they go to the shops, or they just get in there and go up the Broadway. The big shops up there, like a big shopping centre, you know, like your Coles and all that, you know.
Because there's really no shopping in Millers Point now.
No, not now. I don't even know if they've got a little grocery shop or not. Couldn't tell you.
Occasionally there's a little convenience store, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I remember Brussy had Mari's, and they had a little bit of it in it before, like biscuits and things like that. It was all not much.
So you're actually second generation wharf labourer, aren't you?
Yeah.
Your father was the first to work on the waterfront.
The oldest brother, Johnny, he was a wharfie too. He was in Dad's gang.
And your son's a wharfie.
Yeah.
That's three generations. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Feel proud about that? The fact that
I do, in a way. I feel good about it. Yeah. It's I suppose a bit of tradition there. Like, keep something going. You know, like. But like I said, it's to me, it's always been a good job. It's hard work, a lot of hard work, but good paying job and good job, and you meet good friends, a lot of good people down there. I've met some good people over the years, yeah.
So what are your views on the future of Millers Point? How do you see it going?
Well, I know development, they want to change it and put all big units and things like that. I don't know whether they want what people they want in there, or whether they want work and class, or they want something else. But like I said, the way things are going, you haven't got much working class left. But I'd like to see it as it stays, because it's something that's, we're throwing everything away. We're throwing too much old stuff away, to me. Like, I've been to Tasmania not long ago, and I got the shock how a lot of traditions still live with the old houses and factories and things like that. And I know they've done a few up, like they've done down at the old Bond store down the quay, made into restaurants and things like that. Well, just similar down in Tasmania. But they've kept a lot of the old things, which is beautiful. A lot of the old houses, they're lovely.
You mean Salamander Bay in Hobart?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's been nicely restored, hasn't it?
And that's been beautiful, yeah. And, you know, that's what's missing, I think. I think Sydney's just thrown too much away. Too much tradition's gone. It's hard to find what I'm talking to you now, like someone you can talk to like that.
You said that there won't be too many working-class people left, but there are a lot of working-class people being moved in by the Department of Housing.
Yeah, they started moving them in from Balmain and all that, so they kicked them out of Balmain, Pyrmont and all that, and they're gone down there. Because I remember my sister telling me one time, she said, a lot of these are from Balmain and that. So they used to be over there, now they're gone from there. So I don't know where they're going to go from down there if they ever move them again. I say move them out to Mount Druitt or whatever it is, out them ways, but I don't want to go out there. People, so like my sister and that, they're born and bred down the city. It's same down Woolloomooloo was the same.
Warren, you live in Mascot now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you miss Millers Point at all?
Not now, no. Not since I got married and had my own family and that. I've enjoyed it. It's been good. I've looked after Jack and we've given him all the sports. We've been to all the sports everywhere, which I did when I was young down Millers Point. Whatever he wanted to do, we'd sit with him. He wanted to go lifesaver and took him down. He'd done that in Nippers and different things like that. And he's played basketball and football and whatever he wanted to do. It was good.
Do you still have any family living at the point?
My sister Glenda's still down there, yeah. Glenda's still down there. That's the only one.
Right. Okay. Anything else you want to talk about before we sort of end the interview? Is there something we might have missed out on?
I'd just like to see it stay there, because it's a beautiful place. It was a beautiful place, the way that used to be. The old houses, the terrace houses and all that, it had a character. The name is your place here. It's got character to it. It's nice. You know, and that's what's missing nowadays, you know, things like that. Because we've got friends that live out Leppington, and they've got kids and that. So we go out and see them, and used to be farms out there. Camden Valley Way, and all you see is rooftops now. And the houses are so close together and all that, you know, they've got nothing. To me, it's, at least down there, you had something. I know they were terrace houses, but everyone got in together down there. So that's how it was in the old days, because they started building close, didn't they, in there. They didn't have the land they had now to spread out, but just up there, like I said, used to be farms. It's just all rooftops. They're just moving away from everything, just getting away from the city.
Well, let's hope that in this sort of oral history project we can try to preserve some of that past, even in words. We can't do it in actual physical locations. But okay, thanks very much, Warren, for the interview. That's great.
So, thank you. I hope something comes out of that. It's all right.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So I'll just close the interview. This is the end of the interview with Warren Cox and the end of tape number MPFH 19, side A.